Jeannie Flavelle's Hot Commodity Podcast Series. Empowering clients with commercial intelligence, supply chain expertise, and risk management solutions.
Good afternoon, everybody. My name is Mike Coughlin, President and CEO of McKinney Flavelle, and today is May 10th, 2024, and welcome to our Hot Commodity Podcast Series. It is a Friday. It is a WASD day. Kevin's eating donuts, and Kevin, you promised you wouldn't show up on a Friday WASD, but you did today, didn't you, Kevin?
Well, you know, when they schedule six of them over the course of the year, you don't have a lot of choices.
Yeah, that's true.
So I'm here.
That is true. You had to do it. So we appreciate.
Not that I'm counting anybody, but there were six on the calendar.
I understand. Well, listeners, you heard it. Kevin Combs, Vice President McKinney Flavelle, is on the podcast today with us. We also have Eric Thornton, Commodity Specialist at McKinney. Hello, Eric.
Hey, Mike. Hey, everybody.
And last but not least, Nicole Thomas, Vice President of McKinney Flavelle Information Sales and Service. Hello, Nicole.
Hey, Michael.
Hey, listeners. Guess what? We have a webinar coming up on May 22nd at 11 a.m. Pacific Standard Time with our very own Jeffrey Rosinski, Consultant to the Stars. He's going to be talking about dairy. And I just love the title of this one, Production Supply Prices. Move over and let the cow speak is what we're calling it.
Oh, yeah. Is that a healthy cow or sick?
It is a very healthy cow.
Okay.
A very healthy cow. And Jeffrey's going to be talking about all the key things that are happening in the dairy market and kind of what he sees going forward, taking a break from his cocoa and chocolate and moving over to something a little bit more, different. That's what I'm going to say. So anyway, we're going to dive right into this one, and I'm going to say let's start with Eric today and talking about wheat. And this is a big report.
This is a big one.
Because they're talking about new crop stuff for all of y'all.
Yes, yes. May is a big one. So I'll take the baton here first on wheat and overall just comment, you know, no major shocks, which is always a good thing. I'd say largely USDA, I'd say, got it right, holistically speaking. Some things to probably nitpick, and we'll get into that. But, you know, first kind of taking a look at the old crop changes, now 2023-24, the only adjustment was a little true up there to the export category for demand on the U.S. balance sheet. So it rose 10 million bushels. Again, just a small true up. So we actually lost 10 million bushels out of ending stocks, sitting at 688 million bushels, which goes right into beginning stocks for now, our new crop balance sheet, as Mike mentioned. And just kind of getting to the end of the balance sheet of where stocks were projected here, you know, there was belief pre-report and including myself that we would see stocks somewhere, I'd say around 750 to maybe as high as 708 million bushels in this report. USDA came out pretty much right in the middle of that with a 766 million bushel estimate for stocks and new crop. So growing stocks, improving there year over year, kind of like we've been highlighting or indicating now since the beginning of this year. You know, really not a whole lot to pick out even for new crop, especially on the demand side. Relatively stable when you look at food, seed, and residual. But the category that did see some increase was exports. Again, not disagreeing with this either. They, being the USDA, decided to raise that category 55 million bushels to 775 million bushels for all wheat expectations. Obviously, a lot of that projection will change based on other key global wheat producing countries and exporters. But, you know, really, I don't have too much to pick at on demand or overall stocks. The production estimates, I think, are also just kind of hitting at really what we've been talking about for many, many months here. You know, we knew we were going to see a pullback in planted acreage this year at 47.5 million planted acres for all wheat, down 2.1 million acres versus last year. But, you know, we always said, hey, you know, don't be alarmed in that when it comes to harvested area, because we should be able to harvest at least what we had last year, if not even see, you know, better percentage of that acreage get actually harvested because the conditions of this year's crop in the fall and throughout the winter was a whole lot better with drought abating, El Nino around, and that was kind of confirmed today as USDA is projecting a harvested area of 38 million acres. That's up 700,000 acres versus last year. So I do think there's even possibly some upside to that number, maybe even moving higher than that once we kind of get closer into harvest and, you know, see how the spring wheat crop's looking later this fall. So possible upside there in the coming months, but, you know, where that kind of acreage number and harvested area gets us, you know, multiplied by the current yield, which I think is also fair, pegged at 48.9 bushels per acre, slight increase versus last year at 48.6. You know, I think that's going to be possibly something, though, that, you know, struggles to increase from here on out. You know, there's a lot of early indication that at least the hard red winter wheat crop in the southern plains, you know, we might have that increased area of harvested acres, but yields could be a little challenged because we were pretty dry in March and April in some key wheat growing areas, particularly, you know, West Kansas. So maybe we see a little yield decline over the months to come, but ultimately, you know, production kind of looking at 1.85 billion bushels, I think is fair for this crop here. And that kind of gets down to stocks to use ratio for new crop 24-25 right in line with my estimates. So we're at 40.3% for all wheat stocks, stocks to use ratio, up just a little bit from last year at 37.5%. The last thing I'll say on the U.S. side of things is we won't get the individual wheat by class supply and demand figures until the July WASD. So we got to wait two more months for that. But, you know, all in all, I'd say as expected, really not too much in the way of disruption on the U.S. side of things. Globally, again, holistically, pretty much in line with where we were thinking. A slight decrease to ending stocks, looking to decline from 257 million tons down to 253.6 million tons. But I do want to adhere some caution to that figure because USDA is actually projecting a record wheat crop in terms of all the major wheat producers, I should say, globally at 798 million metric tons. Now, you know, I think some of their estimates they had for the major producers were fair at this stage, but you could make the case, I think over the coming months, some regions will actually lose out maybe significantly on the current estimates. Those two regions are notably the EU and secondly Russia. So I think they're too optimistic, especially for EU production, which they're pegging at 132 million tons. That's only down 2 million tons versus last year. But, you know, we know that the acreage is down considerably there in some key countries in the EU. Too wet last fall. Conditions are down versus five-year averages. You know, there's even some recent indications this week that France's wheat crop is going to be down maybe 9%, you know, somewhere around 31 million tons, and they're one of the key producing countries there. So I foresee that EU production maybe is closer to, say, 120 to 125 million tons when it's all said and done. So about 10% lower than where USDA is currently. I think the same could be said with Russia. They at least are forecasting a decrease year over year production for them at 88 million tons. That's down from near record crop last year at 91.5 million tons. But, you know, they've been in the news quite a bit here the last month and a half, pretty dry conditions in April, and even just dealing with some supposedly widespread frost issues from this past weekend. So, you know, if their crop is struggling a little bit here in the spring, maybe they, you know, don't achieve that 88 million ton number and fall back maybe closer to the low 80s when it's all said and done, possibly lower if that frost or other weather doesn't cooperate. I would say while it's expected, the report today at that 253 million ton stock number, it probably is something that's going to grind lower over time, probably going below 250 million tons. But obviously, we'll wait and see. I think the other key wheat producing areas are fine as placeholders for now. 34 million tons from Canada, certainly achievable. They've had a nice turnaround in weather recently as well. You know, Ukraine as a 21 million ton placeholder, I think that's fine. 114 million tons out of India. So everything else I think is okay for now. But, you know, the only other topical thing I'd say was overall demand, as it usually does with wheat, kind of follows that population growth worldwide, expecting to be another record at 802 million tons. So not a surplus year, which is not a surprise, but I do think the global deficit may be a little bigger than what's indicated on paper right now. But, you know, for the time being, much of the price reaction with wheat will continue to be focused on weather, crop condition, and really just a lot of, you know, speculative activity and how they may place their bets here ahead of harvest for the winter wheat crops next month. We'll get the Kansas wheat quality tour commencing next week, but, you know, a whole lot going on in wheat at the moment, but I'd say WASDE was largely as expected for wheat.
Okay, great, Eric. So, you know, one of my questions would be, the market was up this morning. Is that more to do with other factors outside of this report?
Yeah, I think it's more still related to some spec activity where we've seen a whole heck of a lot of shorts covered here throughout the last month. If those that follow Sean's kind of weekly recap of the Commitment of Traders report, we saw a near record amount of short covering in last Friday's report for wheat. I suspect we're seeing some of the same. And then this week, again, the Russian news has been pretty widespread.
Sure.
You know, with their crop potentially struggling. And again, why that's important is, you know, if Russia's crop is down, that's going to, you know, decrease their exportable amount of wheat stocks or wheat for export, and that may increase U.S. export share even more. So again, while 775 million bushels for the U.S. is a fair placeholder right now, if that Russian crop falls further or maybe goes below, you know, even my expectations, I think we have the chance to pick up some more sales next year, maybe even climb above 800 million bushels. I wouldn't be surprised. So that's part of the reasons we're seeing. But I do think we will still see some pressure on wheat as we get later into Q2.
Excellent. Thank you, Eric. Great recap. Let's shift over to corn and soybeans. And Nicole, and a lot of discussion internally of what they would do with yield and planted acreage, and what would they make adjustments on this crop for the world, and where do they see Brazil and Argentina for next year? See, I put it on a tee.
You really did. I appreciate that. Yeah. Tag team, that's
smack
nice.
Smack it.
Now smack it. Okay, let's start with corn then in that case. You know, let me start with the current marketing year here. The domestic balance sheet for 23-24. USDA lowered ending stocks by 100 million bushels. So now we're sitting just a slightly above 2 billion bushels. And that was a result of, you know, some stronger consumption out of two categories, ethanol, 50 million bushels, and exports also boosted by 50 million bushels. And we've seen recent strength in usage for both of those categories. So I don't think that one's too surprising. That keeps our stocks to use, reduces it a bit now to 13.8%, but that's still considered fairly bearish to price. But, you know, it is noteworthy. You know, hopefully this is a little adjustment and we won't see too many more down the road, because we're getting closer to, you know, that psychological threshold of 2 billion bushels. And that's going to be an important factor for next year's balance sheet, particularly with the prospect of lower acreage in 2024. So speaking of the upcoming marketing year, we got our initial look at 24-25, and those ending stocks are pegged at about 2.1 billion bushels. Stocks to use, pretty comparable with this year at 14.1%. And, you know, they kept the acreage at the 90 million acres level from the prospective plantings report. arguably an optimistic yield of 181 bushels per acre to get us to 14.9 billion bushels. So that would be a 3% year-over-year decline for production. But they're also only anticipating some minimal year-over-year growth for demand, most notably for the feed and export categories, both combined boosting consumption by about 100 million bushels. So that part, you know, I guess kind of falls in line with, you know, what the market was anticipating. Where it got interesting is going to the global balance sheets. And starting with 2023-24, USDA lowered production, you know, down 2 million tons from last month's report, 124 million in April, now pegged at 122, but still a little high relative to what CONAB puts those numbers at least from their April forecast. And as a matter of fact, we're supposed to get updated numbers from CONAB next Tuesday. So 1 week where we're not getting those back to back. And then for Argentina, they also lowered production 2 million tons down to 53 compared to, you know, Rosario Grain Exchange puts that crop a little closer to 47.5 million tons compared to their prior forecast of 50.5. So ultimately, we got some reductions, but we're baby stepping this down, I guess, to kind of limit the impact on ending stocks, or at least what's visible on the balance sheet. So then looking forward to 24-25, USDA is projecting Brazilian production is going to rebound to about 127 million tons. And Argentinian production may fall a little bit to 51 million tons, again, relative to their current projections for 23-24. Chinese production expected to grow by about 3 million tons, pushing 292 million tons. And Ukrainian production expected to fall just slightly to 27 million tons. So overall, though, when you look at the numbers, overall global stocks are expected to fall to about 312 million tons in 24-25 from the current marketing year number, which is currently projected at 313 million tons, again, based on the numbers on the USDA balance sheet. So for soybeans, just to shift gears here for a second, on soybeans, for the domestic market, nothing too surprising. Current marketing year estimates for soybeans were left unchanged. They kept ending stocks at 340 million bushels. And stocks to use at 8.3%. The projections for 24-25 also seem reasonable with a rebound in production, of course, on that higher acreage, if we indeed get that degree of increase, and an average yield of 52 bushels per acre, which, you know, I think both are reasonable. Considering the additional crush capacity that is currently online, as well as that is coming soon, that category of consumption is projected to jump to 2.425 billion bushels. And they're also expecting exports to remain, you know, subdued, at least from a historical standpoint, near that 1.825 billion bushel level, which, again, is reasonable. So overall, it looks good from an ending stock standpoint, may grow by about 100 million bushels to 445 million. Got an initial stocks to use ratio of 10.2%, which would be great, and keep bearish prices on, or bearish pressure, I should say, on prices, unless South American production comes under pressure next year. And then from a global standpoint, soybean ending stocks for 23-24 were reduced by about 2.5 million tons. USDA reduced Brazilian production, arguably by a measly 1 million tons to 154 million. The reduction was well below the market's expectations. You know, we us included thinking that number was going to come down by something closer to 2.5 million tons. And never mind that the April estimate from CONAB anyway was 146 million tons. So, in Argentina is at 50 million tons, unchanged from last month. That's pretty well in line with what the sources out of Argentina are suggesting, especially considering that they're about 44% harvested with that crop now. And then thinking, going a little bit to shifting gears here to soybean oil, this was arguably where I think things were really going to get interesting. We saw a bit of improvement on ending stocks for soybean oil in the U.S. That's now pegged at 1.677 billion pounds, and that was completely due to a 50 million pound increase to imports. Otherwise, the forecasts were left unchanged, and we're keeping stocks to use at 6%. And I might argue there's some possibility these stocks will improve additionally as long as there aren't any material changes to the current dynamics in the use of feedstock for renewable diesel. And that remains to be seen. You know, there's been rumblings now or a push for an investigation by the domestic oilseed crushing industry to look into some of this used cooking oil that's coming into the country. And they're contending or alleging that the oil may be blended with palm oil, which would be a big no-no for receiving subsidies. And, you know, frankly, it's been a combination of higher imports of tallow and this used cooking oil that has helped to alleviate some of the strain on soybean oil stocks or soybean oil supplies for usage in that category. So if that changes, you know, that could certainly shift more of that consumption back towards soybean oil in the U.S. And then for 24-25, nothing screams irrational on the U.S. soybean oil balance sheet. You know, exports staying weak, around 500 million. Food use with some modest growth, you know, to 14.3 billion. And biofuel use at 14 billion. With anticipated growth in the renewable diesel sector and enough to, you know, kind of offset declining production of biodiesel. All those sound fairly reasonable. And the best news is it appears soybean oil stocks will grow in 24-25 by about 150 million pounds to 1.842 billion. And a stocks to use ratio of 6.3%. Now, one last thing I want to note, we don't typically talk about soybean meal in this podcast, but it was noteworthy looking at that balance sheet, the U.S. balance sheet, and that export category is expected to grow by 1.5 million short tons in 2024-25. So basically indicates we have to find a home for all this soybean meal with all this new crush capacity and strong demand for soybean oil. And we're going to need to find those homes outside of the U.S. And one last thing as it relates to soybeans and, you know, kind of the outlook for next year. All I can say is let's hope La Nina isn't a problem for South America in 24-25. We've got Brazilian production for the upcoming marketing year pegged at 169 million tons, which would be up 14 million tons from this year or 9% from USDA's current projection for 23-24. And that's really what's kind of driving this potential for a sharp increase in ending stocks for soybeans in the upcoming marketing year. So just some food for thought. Let's wish for good weather for the next 6 months to get us there.
All right, Nicole, very good recap. Let's shift over to Kevin and talk a little bit about sugar. We got some better crops coming, Kevin.
Well, better crops, that's potential, but a long way from that. When you look at sugar, though, I think, you know, first let's talk about old crop or current crop because the crops weren't better. And, you know, warm weather and great for planting beets, but not so good for beet piles has, you know, continued to reduce what was once being forecast as a record beet crop back down to just, you know, pretty ho-hum and maybe even a little bit below average if you look at the last few years. So they took another 49,000 tons out of the current beet crop estimate down to 5.095. You know, last couple of years have been in the 5.1 range. And cane kind of saw the same thing. We've actually been looking at that Florida number, thought it was strong for months after months, but USDA was persistent with it, but they've dropped that down 35,000 tons, but still to a good crop, 2.06 million tons. You know, further down, imports weren't much of a story this month. They actually increased TRQ imports, 23,000 tons more available supply from the Philippines than was anticipated. That was offset by just a 2,000 reduction in imports from Mexico. Basically, USDA is looking at the low-pole raws that are going to be available for export to the United States and saw a little bit of reduction there. So not a lot from supply side changes other than the production decline. However, probably the most interesting change for old crop was in the deliveries, Mike, because they decided to lower deliveries by 100,000 tons. And
Whoa, yeah.
You know, I looked at the SMD report and go, okay, let's see. Did we go back? You know, the last month's data looked promising. It looked like demand was starting to pick up from the U.S. industry. And again, this month it was great. U.S. Shipments were up 1%. However, digging in a little deeper, got into looking at non-reporter imports, and they had been slow through the first 5 months, and the 6 month, looking at March data, was no different. Year to date, we've only had 221,000 tons of non-reporter imports come in. And, you know, if you look at the last, you know, call it even 10 years, there's some years where we end up below 800,000 tons, maybe even 1 year where we got below 700,000 tons. But typically, we're seeing over 800,000 tons, well up into the 900,000 tons. And, you know, last year, obviously, our supplies were tight, but we finished at 939,000 tons. So, you know, just quick math, we're under 25% of normal pace of what we expect for it. And we're only 50% of the way through the crop year. So something's either going to have to change with a lot more non-reporter imports to catch up, or we're coming in well, well below. I'm sure we're going to catch up to some degree, but obviously USDA felt there's going to be a big shortage compared to what we've seen over the last several years. So that was probably the biggest change to the Wall Street Report as far as, you know, whether or not that was going to be expected or not. And overall, that ended up putting ending stocks up 36,000 tons, stocks to use ratio at, you know, in that normal range, 13.9%. So not a huge change, but certainly a reflection of what we've seen demand-wise in sugar, and seeing companies that are showing lower volumes year over year. And, you know, have to see how that plays out going forward. 24-25, kind of along the lines of what you'd expect. I think, as Eric mentioned, wheat was kind of there. Sugar was pretty much all along the lines of expectations. It is interesting, you know, you look at past years when USDA came out with their initial beet estimate, they come out with some pretty pessimistic numbers, you know, almost maybe a worst case scenario. This month, they did highlight the early plantings of beets in the Red River Valley, and decided to come out with using an overall beet yield of 31.52 tons per acre, and came up using that 1.129 million acres planted from the March planting intentions report, which is lower than what we had the last couple of years. But the last couple of years, planted acreage got a boost due to late planting. So that was, you know, pretty much in line with expectations on planted acres number. And anyway, that gives us a beet crop at 5.111 million short tons raw value. On the cane side, again, we got some good numbers, you know, expecting a healthy increase out of Louisiana for next year. Hopefully the, you know, weather cooperates and we don't have any issues like, again, we had this year with a really dry, hot summer. So 2.085 million tons for Louisiana, 2.036 million tons for Florida. And unfortunately, of course, you know, with Texas discontinuing operations, that's it. Just two states on that cane production. Looking at imports, it really gets an incomplete because USDA does not have a refined TRQ announced, so TRQ imports are basically forecast at their minimum, which is 1.415 million short tons raw value. Other program using, again, a low figure, 200,000 tons. And then getting into non-program imports, specifically Mexico and high tier, the USDA is forecasting Mexico's crop to come back up next year, just under 5.2 million tons, which is right along the lines of what we've been hearing from sources and people we talk to in Mexico. So a rebound, but still well below the 6 million metric ton number. However, that is giving USDA confidence to say Mexico will be able to rebound and provide, you know, most of the sugar that we're going to need to get us back up to a 13.5% stocks to use ratio when we get into, you know, setting those numbers. So just under 1.2 million tons from Mexico next year. However, of course, when you look at high tier, we've been averaging well over 400,000 tons every year. And of course, this year needing much more supplies because of Mexico's shortage at 855,000 tons. USDA is starting out high tier imports back down there at 216,000 tons. I'm sure that number is going to come up as we go through the year. And then switching over to demand side, looking at the delivery figures, what would they do with you know, things looking pessimistic this year? Well, they're basically just calling it neutral. No growth, no slacking off lower either. So we're sitting there at flat numbers on demand. They're forecasting 12.35 million tons for deliveries for food use. So
interesting.
That's an interesting number. No growth.
No growth, which typically in the past you've talked about at least 1% growth for population, right?
Well, population, you'd assume a little over 1%. I think, you know, you looked at pre-COVID times, we would see deliveries somewhere between 0.5% up to maybe 1%. So you'd, you know, you'd hope to see that type of number, but, you know, is that pessimism on the economy? Is that pessimism that, you know, people are going to start looking at some of these dietary drugs, so Ozempic, et cetera? You know, what's going into that? Could be a lot of different things, but...
Yeah, probably a combination of a little of all of that.
Yeah, we always like to say high prices have an impact, and, you know, maybe it's a little bit of the high prices we're seeing.
Excellent. Anything else, Kevin, or shall we wrap this one up for this week?
Let's wrap it up.
Thank you to Kevin, Nicole, and Eric for great recaps of the WASD. We're going to wrap this one up. As I always like to say, live with an attitude of gratitude. Enjoy every minute, moment with your friends and family. Happy Mother's Day to all you mothers out there.
Yes. Happy Mother's Day, everyone.
Happy Mother's Day.
Enjoy your weekend and do something nice for your mom, your wife.
And leave her alone. And
leave her alone.
That's part of it. Do something nice and then leave her alone.
Okay, fair enough. That sounds like a different podcast. So we're going to wrap this one up. Take care, everybody.
See ya.
So long.
That concludes this podcast episode. For expanded commentary and more detailed information, log on to McKinney Favelle's IQ Ingredient Intelligence platform and listen to our Market Insights podcast. If you're not a subscriber, visit McKinney-Favelle.com for more information. And as always, follow us on YouTube, LinkedIn, Facebook, and Twitter.